From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins. Sitting in today for Tony is Evan Fowler.
Evan Fowler here from Bot Radio Network, sitting in for Tony. Tony, I believe, is down in Louisiana, and believe it or not, he's going to be one of our guests on the broadcast today. I'll join all of you in saying, you know, this is the things that are happening in our country and in our world are just amazing. And we're going to be talking about that quite a bit today. That's some of the primary content that we'll be dealing with because it's very, very important. And, actually, I was off 3 days last week with a fever and a cough, but thank the Lord, it was not coronavirus. It was just a typical little respiratory flu. So I may sound a little bit stuffed up today. That's the reason. At any rate, glad you're here listening to Washington Watch today. We're going to kick off the show in just a little bit here by talking with Calvary Chapel Chino Hills Senior Pastor Jack Hibbs to talk about his church's response to coronavirus. And he's going to be a little bit delayed, but we'll catch him when he gets on the line with us. The second segment, we will be, as I mentioned, talking with FRC President and Washington Watch usual host Tony Perkins to get a deep dive on how to prayerfully approach the coronavirus outbreak. And in the third segment, CNSNews.com editor-in-chief Terry Jeffrey will break down last night's Democratic presidential debate. You know, there is an election coming up, as far as we know, as I recall. And, you know, the whole political thing kind of gets set on the back burner when you're dealing with a coronavirus pandemic. But, some of the things that they talked about last night are quite relevant to our situation right now. One of the big topics, of course, is health care. And so we're going to get into into that conversation because it's pertinent to what's going on. And then to round out the program in the last segment, we'll hear the Democratic frontrunner's views on taxpayer-funded abortion, as well as other topics from FRC's Vice President for Policy and Government Affairs, Travis Weber, and FRC's Director of Christian Ethics and Biblical Worldview, David Clausen. So in the meantime, while we're waiting for Jack Hibbs to get on the line, I believe Travis Weber is here from Washington. And he's going to tell us about the most recent news conference that occurred this afternoon. Travis, are you on with us?
I'm here.
All right. Good. And you are in Washington. Am I correct about that?
I'm here in the nation's capital.
All right. Well, good for you. It's kind of quiet there, from what I understand, compared to the usual hubbub that's going on.
Well, it definitely feels a little quieter today as people are starting to take pretty significant steps to isolate and help curb the spread of this virus. Definitely caused an ease of traffic on the roads and just a general slowing of the nation's business. But, you know, we've been working to represent our interest here in D.C. as Congress works on a bill responding to coronavirus relief. My team has been working on that Friday, and that continues to develop today.
All right. So there was a press conference not too long ago, and there was some new information announced with respect to sizes of groups. What are some of the other key points of the news conference today?
Yes. So President Trump and a number of top officials responding to the crisis have held a press conference at 3 p.m. today, at which they announced new guidance for folks to avoid social gatherings in groups of more than 10 people. A number of other risk reduction factors, such as avoiding discretionary travel, shopping trips, social visits, not visiting nursing homes, retirement, or long-term care facilities due to the increased risk to elderly, and practicing good hygiene, which we all know. Wash our hands steadily. Don't spread germs. Avoid touching your face, sneezing. Sneeze or cough into a tissue, disinfect frequently. These are things we're being told, but now, you know, it's increasingly becoming apparent that we need everyone in the nation to take on this responsibility themselves if we're going to effectively curb the spread of this virus.
Right. And I was reading this morning about some large events that took place. There was a concert somewhere and a couple of things that really it's kind of foolish to, at least at this point, to be in large groups like that. And so I hope that people will take these recommendations seriously, because It certainly will avoid the spread if you don't get into large groups, obviously. Well, let me go back to something you said just a moment ago, and that is your team is working on some legislation. And what are the – you know, FRC works day in and day out for faith, family, and freedom. Of course, those are the main things that you concentrate on thematically. But specifically, what kinds of things are you doing working with Congress right now in the midst of this pandemic?
Yeah, so you know, as we do in many things, we're looking out for the interest of faith, family, and freedom here in D.C. And so that means, primarily ascertaining where pro-life issues and pro-family issues are advanced as we see the passage of legislation through Congress. Here, we know that the Democrats had tried to open up a loophole for abortion funding. And get around the Hyde Amendment, which prohibits taxpayer funding of abortion, as this was being negotiated on Friday. So, you know, FRC really tries to make sure that our interests are represented as these things come up. I mean, this is supposed to be dealing with coronavirus. We don't need activists trying to sneak in abortion loopholes into this when we have a public health emergency on our nation's hands. That's the kind of thing we're going to be looking out for and making sure your voice is heard here in D.C. We've been in close contact with various folks throughout the day Friday, continue to do so today to make sure we got a bill which represents our interests. Now, this thing's very, very far, you know, it's very up in the air still at this point. The House passed a bill late in the Friday night, but this morning we know that details and technical corrections to the bill were still being hashed out in the House. They're still being hashed out as of this moment. We don't have a bill that's been kicked over to the Senate yet. And even when the Senate gets a bill, we know there are concerns by the small business lobby and others about this. This is an emergency posture. And while we need to respond to the crisis, we don't need to be rash about it. There are some who are concerned about the spending inherent in this bill, the burden on small business, because one of the requirements is paid leave, and it's going to put a burden on small businesses. President Trump had proposed tax relief and things more along those lines. We know he's interested in getting something to provide relief to all Americans affected by this. But we need to make sure it's the right type of relief and the most effective type of relief. So, you know, we'll see when this comes out of the House, what the Senate does with it. The president's news conference today touched on this, but dealt with a lot of other things. In addition to the practical advice I just mentioned, they talked about how they're working with the nation's governors, working with states to more effectively free up a rapid response to this crisis in terms of scaling up for widespread testing, making sure that medical equipment is on hand to protect not only the providers and professionals, but those who are trying to help respond to the crisis. So a lot occurring today. There's going to be a lot that continues to develop with this rapidly changing situation, but we'll try to stay on top of that.
Yeah, I tell you, and as I mentioned at the top of the program, there is so much that's happening so quickly. And so, Travis, really appreciate your update on that. Travis Weber is the Vice President for Policy and Government Affairs with Family Research Council, and he's online. He's going to be in our fourth segment. We're going to be talking a little bit more in depth about some of the policy discussions that took place at the Democratic debate last night, the one-on-one mano-a-mano between former Vice President Joe Biden and Senator Bernie Sanders in a location where there was no audience. Travis, again, we're waiting for Pastor Jack Hibbs, and hopefully he'll be able to join us to talk about what his church is doing and what other churches can be doing during this very difficult time in our country to reach out to help and how they can work around some of the restrictions that I don't mean bypass them, but work with the restrictions that are becoming more and more stringent here as the days go by. But Travis, if you would for a moment address, as I mentioned again at the top of the broadcast, that, you know, we have an election coming up. Politics is taking a back seat for the most part to what's going on now, which is really good because we needed some relief from the political frenzy that was going on. But why is it still important for us to talk about some of the issues that were debated last night? Why is it still very relevant?
Well, you know, these issues are not going to go away. The nation's attention is turned towards the coronavirus, quite understandably. But you know, when this passes, and we'll come out of it, the question is, you know, when exactly, and we're trying to alleviate a lot of the potential damage and head off the potential consequences of what we're looking at right now. But we will come out of this, and when we do, we're going to be confronted with the issues that we've always confronted and dealt with in the public space. So, you know, in that sense, FRC is not going anywhere. We have continued to drill down and hone in on our ability to provide an analysis of the issues of faith, family, and freedom from a biblical worldview as they play out in our nation's capital and Congress and state legislatures. We've continued to solidify our basis as a Christian organization, analyzing, providing leadership on policy from a perspective, from a Christian perspective, for the benefit of the nation. You know, the attention right now is on the coronavirus. And in that regard, there are things that I think, you know, many of our followers in churches, pastors, can be doing that are practical tips and steps that may not be a one-size-fits-all, but we know that churches can step in and take certain steps as they deal with the reality of where we're at. Many of those steps overlap with the common sense safety steps that we've already been informed of, encouraging sick members to stay at home and seek medical care, providing hand sanitizer for use on property, encouraging smaller groups, encouraging digital or live stream interactions, and just kind of, you know, trying to take into account the church being the church, but in smaller gatherings and more effective and creative gatherings. This is an extreme situation, and the government, you know, under our constitution and legal system, our framework, the government is within the right to restrict gatherings of all sizes in certain scenarios that we're facing right now, as long as they're not targeting religious institutions. They're legally allowed to do that. And we would encourage pastors to seek to serve the communities around them at this time and seek to ascertain and pray how they might serve those communities. So when we think about Family Research Council, the issues are not going away. We're going to continue to address them. Our focus is leveraged in a unique manner right now to try to help confront and be of service as our nation confronts this crisis.
Absolutely. You know, one of the things that struck me with respect to some of the topics that were discussed last night that's extraordinarily relevant, and we'll talk about this more in the final segment, Travis, when you're back with us again, is the healthcare issue, because some of the ideas that are being proposed, particularly by Bernie Sanders, are extraordinarily radical. And actually, I have to give Joe Biden a point, a couple of points, because he mentioned in the discussion last night, and in fact, we may later hear an audio clip of this exchange, but he reminded Mr. Sanders that Italy has essentially a public health service or socialized medicine, which is where Mr. Sanders wants to head this country, and it's breaking down. So, Travis, I want you to maybe briefly comment on that. We can expound on it more in the fourth segment of the broadcast.
No, absolutely. And I think this points out there are real practical implications to these policy positions that we take. So we'll certainly talk more about that later.
Yeah, very good. Well, and again, Travis, thank you for standing in for Jack Hibbs. Jack obviously has a lot of things going on right now, and hopefully we'll be able to talk with him on another day. That didn't work out for him today. And we'll be talking with Tony Perkins coming up in the next segment. So, Travis, we'll look forward to talking with you in just about 30 minutes or so. So thanks very much. Well, this is Evan Fowler sitting in today for Tony Perkins on Washington Watch, talking about, well, very, very important topics. We'll be back in just a few moments with Tony Perkins calling us from Louisiana.
Is historic masculinity lost forever? Where can boys, young men, husbands, and fathers find a model of manhood, leadership, and strength in a culture of gender confusion? We need men to be men, tough with compassionate strength, bent toward justice without compromise, locking arms and standing. We need to be the men God created us to be and fight for all that is right, true, and just. This is Tony Perkins inviting you to join us at a Stand Courageous Men's Conference. To find out more, go to standcourageous.com. This conference is led by men who are seasoned, compassionate men who understand the issues of the day and will invest in you, helping you understand your role as a defender, a provider, an instructor, a battle buddy, and a chaplain, so that you can have the generational influence that God has designed you to have. Learn more at StandCourageous.com. That's StandCourageous.com.
Did you know that Planned Parenthood is the primary supplier of abortions in the U.S.? According to Planned Parenthood's most recent annual report, it committed over 345,000 abortions in fiscal year 2018. That means, on average, Planned Parenthood aborted 1,768 babies every single day in 2018. And while Planned Parenthood's report revealed an increase in abortions committed, many of the services they provide, such as breast exams and cancer screenings, have drastically decreased. FRC recently released its 2020 edition of The Real Planned Parenthood, Leading the Culture of Death. In this resource, you will find many facts revealing the truth, that Planned Parenthood is in the business of abortion, not healthcare. To access this resource and to find out more, go to frc.org/Planned Parenthood Facts. That's frc.org/Planned Parenthood Facts.
We can all benefit from a good lecture. They inform you and grow you. But sometimes you can't make it in person to every talk, seminar, or lecture you'd like to. Fortunately, Family Research Council now has a new podcast so you won't miss out. FRC's new weekly podcast called Lecture Me was created to help inform and equip listeners on the biggest issues affecting our culture today. Each episode presents a lecture selected from the archives of the FRC Speaker Series. Our podcast features today's top thinkers who address important issues like religious liberty, life, marriage, family, sexuality, public policy, and the culture, all from a biblical worldview. Make sure to stay tuned after each lecture to hear FRC's thoughts on the content as they further discuss the topic at hand. The Lecture Me podcast is available wherever podcasts are found, or visit frc.org/podcasts.
You're listening to Washington Watch on this Monday afternoon. Eben Fowler sitting in for Tony Perkins, and we had hoped to get Jack Hibbs, Pastor Jack Hibbs, from out in California on the line to talk about what his church is doing and how they are working to help their community, and also, you know, working with some of the restrictions that we've all been hearing about. Tony Perkins is my next guest, but we're also having some difficulty getting a hold of him. So in the meantime, we'll just, you and I will chat here a little bit and talk about some of the things that are going on. I don't know if you all had an opportunity to hear the press conference this afternoon. Travis Weber was on during the first segment talking about that a little bit. Last night, they were talking about recommendations of being in groups of no larger than 50. Today, that number has been reduced to 10, and of course the reason for that is because they want to do whatever can be done to stem the spread of coronavirus. So that's what's going on. So one of the things that we were going to talk with Tony about, and if we get him on the line here, we will do just that. One of the questions I wanted to ask him is, why is it important to fuel every day, coronavirus or not, with prayer? And, you know, yesterday was declared as a National Day of Prayer by President Trump, which, and if you have not seen the proclamation for that, I would really encourage you to take the time to look that up. Just look up the proclamation for the National Day of Prayer that was issued. I believe it was issued on Friday by President Trump. It was magnificent. It was just amazing to hear, to see the words penned by the president with respect to the importance of prayer. And, you know, it was just wonderful. It was fantastic. So I would really encourage you to go take a look at that. But prayer is so important. We have got to remember that. And we need to take some time every day to reach out and ask the Lord in prayer to, and there's so many different specific things that we can be praying about. We can be praying for those who have been affected specifically by coronavirus, those who've taken ill, for the families of those who have lost loved ones to it. We can be praying for the first responders, you know, the first responders who are doing so much, and that would be our paramedics, EMTs, law enforcement, fire departments, and then also for those, you know, obviously healthcare practitioners. And so we need to be praying for all of those people because they're under tremendous additional stress right now, and they're doing some really difficult work. Producer just told me that Jack Hibbs is online. Pastor Jack, are you there with us?
Yes, sir, I am. Thank you for your patience.
Oh, not a problem. It's so good. I'm so glad that you were able to join us for the broadcast. Better late than never, right?
Well, and I do have a good excuse. Yeah.
Okay.
I just literally moments ago stepped out of a conference call. As I serve on the Presidential Faith Initiative team, there was a great gathering just following the president's most recent press conference today. And so, you know, the latest and what we know and what we are considering as a church, as a spiritual entity, these United States, the houses of worship, what's the prudent step? What can we expect in the near and long-term future? So it was a very informative meeting. It was a meeting that is something very vital to me in light of the fact that in California, you know, like many states, we've had churches flat out close their doors. We had churches with doors wide open and something in between. So it was productive, but it's great. I tell you what, it is great to have a president who not only calls for a national day of prayer, but we got word today that this is not the last time that he plans on calling for a national day of prayer. So that's encouraging.
Well, Jack, before you jumped on the line, I was just talking with our listeners about the proclamation that the president issued on Friday. And just how I assume you had a chance to read that.
I sure did.
Wow. Wasn't that amazing?
Yeah, and if I observed it correctly, I need to go back and look, but I think I counted at least six scriptural references in his proclamation, which is just such a blessing. I just thank God that we have a man whose heart is open to doing what pleases the Lord.
Now, we have just a couple of minutes left. And, Jack, what I'm going to do is, because this program is sort of loosely held together, I'm going to ask if it's possible for you to kind of remain available, you know, for the next 30 minutes or so in case we need to call on you again, if you wouldn't mind doing that, because we have such a short block of time here. I want to try to cram in some of the questions I was going to ask you in the first segment. And,
sure.
And the first one is, how is your church responding, and how are you staying involved in the community?
Well, our church is a large church, and it's the spearhead of the community. The church is doing fantastic. We had normal, regular services yesterday, Sunday, which means we had three services. We had some 10,000 adults present. To ensure safety, we had a major presence of hand sanitizers. We had a professional cleaning company, literally cleaning, walking about the bathrooms and things like that. People were very well instructed to not greet one another other than a thumbs up.
Yeah.
A thumbs up and a smile, because
sure,
we're a very affectionate church, and a lot of hugging, a lot of handshaking at our church, so all of that's been suspended. Now, that will change this weekend in light of the president's strong recommendations, and you'll be hearing about those shortly in the news cycle today, but more than ever, this is the time where the church, in so many different ways, is to be available for prayer, to lay hands on the sick, to anoint them with oil, and, of course, never stop preaching. Just keep going.
That's right. And I didn't mention that, Jack, you are the speaker on the Real Radio broadcast. We carry that on the Bot Radio Network. So if you've not listened to Pastor Hibbs' program, Real Radio, there's an opportunity to do that here on Bot Radio Network. Well, Jack, thank you so much. And again, if you're able to kind of remain available by phone if we need to tap you, we may not, but that would be fantastic. And just thank you so much for what you're doing in your church and in your community, and for the words of advice that you've given us.
Thank you, brother.
Well, coming up, we'll hear the details of last night's Democratic debate from CNSNews.com editor-in-chief Terry Jeffrey. And we'll be hearing from him right after this, listening to Washington Watch. Eben Fowler sitting in today for Tony Perkins here from Bot Radio Network. Be back right after the break.
What are you reading this spring? At FRCblog.com, we have timely and original commentary on the issues facing our culture today. Our blog is written by our policy experts, the Family Research Council team, and outside contributors. On our blog, you can read about a wide variety of topics, including religious liberty, life, marriage, family, sexuality, public policy, and the culture. Some of our most recent blog posts include, "To abandon the nuclear family ideal is to abandon being human." "Why does the abortion industry hate women?" "China uses coronavirus to oppress religious minorities," and many more. At Family Research Council, our mission is to advance faith, family, and freedom in the culture by helping you to live out your faith and to stand for truth. With our blog, we hope to help you do that. Stay informed and get the resources you need at FRCblog.com. Again, that's FRCblog.com.
The Fairness for All Act was recently introduced to the House of Representatives after the passage of the Equality Act. In response, FRC has come out with a new publication, The Unfairness of the Fairness for All Act. This act attempts to find a compromise between the First Amendment protection of religious freedom and the demands of the LGBT community. Despite having the best intentions, it is an ill-advised and poorly drafted bill that does not achieve its goal. If this act is passed into law, it would allow the federal government to impose a belief system and ideology about sexual behavior and identity on all Americans. The Fairness for All Act would negatively impact religious freedom, true equality, and the privacy and safety of women. To access this resource and to learn more, go to frc.org/fairnessforall. That's frc.org/fairnessforall.
You're listening to Washington Watch. Eben Fowler with Bot Radio Network sitting in today for Tony Perkins, who we had hoped to talk with in the last segment, but he was unavailable. It's just been one of those days, you know. So thanks for hanging in there with us. Well, yesterday, the Democratic presidential race saw its first one-on-one debate of the campaign, and it was quite literally one-on-one because no audience was in attendance amidst the coronavirus concerns. Joining me now with the details of the debate is CNSNews.com editor-in-chief Terry Jeffrey. Terry, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Well, thanks for being there, man. It's we've had some fun trying to get our guests on here today, but we're managing just fine. Well, you know, I found out last night I was going to be hosting this conversation today, so I sat down and made myself watch the debate because I wanted to at least have some idea of what the two had said, the mano a mano debate. So, generally speaking, what did you learn from the debate?
Well, I think that
anything.
It helped expose just how far left Joe Biden is. He's not really that much to the right of Bernie Sanders. And I do believe what we're going to see tomorrow night with the four primaries coming up is Biden's quite likely going to sweep those primaries and will be the obvious Democratic nominee by Wednesday morning. And I do believe the liberal media has stayed away from talking about the things that Joe Biden is advocating and that he's for because they know that his views are so far left that he's not much to the right of Bernie Sanders. And the reason Bernie Sanders is getting beat in the Democratic primaries is because he's so far left. And so I think the big question in the days between now and the November election is, are people going to come to understand what it is that Joe Biden really wants to see happen in this country?
Well, you know, the thing about Sanders, and you just mentioned it, the truth about his views has become more and more apparent, and I think people are more and more afraid of it. I watched I guess you could call it a documentary. I was just digging for some more information about his background. His tune has not changed since probably 45 to 50 years ago. He has been carrying essentially the same message since the days when he visited Daniel Ortega, the Sandinista leader in Nicaragua, and his friends, the Castro brothers in Cuba. My view is that this man is extremely radical. And am I taking it too far, or do you agree with that?
You mean Bernie Sanders?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, there's no doubt he's extremely radical. I mean, Bernie Sanders is a self-described socialist. And even last night, as Joe Biden was pointing out, he had a hard time not saying nice things about China. China, you know, and it was interesting, both of them kept on using the term authoritarian when they were talking about China. China is run by the Communist Party. It is a communist regime. It is a communist country. And yes, communism means you're authoritarian, too. You tell people what to do. So I think the fact that, you know, this is a self-described socialist who wants to say nice things about what's been accomplished in communist China really tells where Bernie Sanders is coming from. He is, in fact, a socialist.
Well, he's been ranting and raving literally for decades about, you know, evil corporations and Wall Street and these sorts of things. And what he fails to remember is that Wall Street and the evil corporations and others are the ones that provide jobs for the rest of the country. And so he wants to do all of these programs that are going to cost many estimates, say, in the multiple tens of trillions of dollars. But whenever he's asked about how he's going to pay for it or how it's actually going to work, you know, the thing that quite frankly, Terry, frustrates me a lot is that I have seen little to no ability in the press. And I'm going to include some of the people on Fox News here. There was a town hall that Bret Baier and Martha McCallum had with Sanders, and he walked all over them. They did not have the background or the knowledge to ask the questions that he should have been asked. Now, I've seen them try before, but he really is very good at wiggling out of it. Well, let me just, because we're running out of time, let me ask you a couple other questions, too. Joe Biden decided to make some news last night, and he claimed that his vice presidential pick would be a woman.
Right.
What's your take on that, or is it just identity politics?
Well, I think it's a little ironic that he's discriminating against men, that he's absolutely ruled out any possibility that a man might be his running mate. But, you know, to say the truth, I think politically it makes sense for Biden. If I were Biden, I'd look for a female running mate who can help win the swing voters in the northern Midwest. I suspect he's probably going to lean towards picking a female running mate who will alienate those kind of voters, which would be good for the Republicans and good for Trump. But it doesn't surprise me that Joe Biden made that promise, and I'm sure it helps his appeal to the base of the Democratic Party.
Well, then they asked Sanders if he would make that same commitment, and Sanders left enough room open that he wouldn't have to, if you notice the way he
right.
answered that question. Well, so how do you think
yeah. –
go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, as I say, you know, take that a step further. If you look at U.S. presidential elections in the post-World War II era, most of them are decided by swing voters in the northern Midwest and states like Pennsylvania. Trump won those states. And I think that Biden in the primaries has proved he has more appeal in those places than Bernie Sanders. But the question is whether or not when you really define Biden by what he's calling for on the issues, he really will in a general election have the appeal to those swing voters in those key states like Pennsylvania, Ohio, Michigan, Wisconsin that Trump won 4 years ago.
Well, CNSNews.com editor-in-chief Terry Jeffrey has been my guest in this segment. Terry, thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Well, coming up, staying on the topic of the debate, what did the Democratic frontrunners have to say about tax-funded abortion and maybe a few other topics if we get to it? We'll talk to FRC's Vice President for Policy and Government Affairs, Travis Weber, and FRC's Director of Christian Ethics and Biblical Worldview, David Clausen, about that right after this.
Where can young men, husbands, and fathers find a model of real manhood, leadership, and strength in today's culture of gender confusion? This is Tony Perkins inviting you to join us at a Stand Courageous Men's Conference led by men who are seasoned, compassionate men who understand the issues of the day and will help you understand your role as a defender, provider, instructor, battle buddy, and chaplain so that you can have the generational influence God has designed you to have. Learn more at StandCourageous.com.
Recently, a bill called the Fairness for All Act was introduced to the House of Representatives. In response, FRC has a new resource, the Unfairness of the Fairness for All Act. This act attempts to find a compromise between the First Amendment's protection of religious freedom and the demands of the LGBT community. But, unfortunately, it is a poorly drafted bill that would negatively impact religious freedom, true equality, and the privacy and safety of women. Learn more at frc.org/fairnessforall.
Did you know that Planned Parenthood is the primary supplier of abortions in the U.S.? According to Planned Parenthood's most recent annual report, it committed over 345,000 abortions in fiscal year 2018. That means, on average, Planned Parenthood aborted 1,768 babies every single day in 2018. And while Planned Parenthood's report revealed an increase in abortions committed, many of the services they provide, such as breast exams and cancer screenings, have drastically decreased. FRC recently released its 2020 edition of The Real Planned Parenthood, Leading the Culture of Death. In this resource, you will find many facts revealing the truth, that Planned Parenthood is in the business of abortion, not healthcare. To access this resource and to find out more, go to frc.org/Planned Parenthood Facts. That's frc.org/Planned Parenthood Facts.
We can all benefit from a good lecture. They inform you and grow you. But sometimes you can't make it in person to every talk, seminar, or lecture you'd like to. Fortunately, Family Research Council now has a new podcast, so you won't miss out. FRC's new weekly podcast, called Lecture Me, was created to help inform and equip listeners on the biggest issues affecting our culture today. Each episode presents a lecture selected from the archives of the FRC Speaker Series. Our podcast features today's top thinkers who address important issues like religious liberty, life, marriage, family, sexuality, public policy, and the culture, all from a biblical worldview. Make sure to stay tuned after each lecture to hear FRC's thoughts on the content as they further discuss the topic at hand. The Lecture Me podcast is available wherever podcasts are found, or visit frc.org/podcasts.
And welcome back to the last segment of Washington Watch for this Monday afternoon. Evan Fowler sitting in for Tony Perkins, who, interestingly, is going to be joining us here in just a moment. In the previous segment, we heard about the overall tone of last night's debate. But when it comes to policy, what did the candidates have to say about taxpayer-funded abortion? Joining me now to talk about it is FRC's Vice President for Policy and Government Affairs, Travis Weber, and FRC's Director of Christian Ethics and Biblical Worldview, David Clausen. But not only that, wait, there's more. Tony Perkins, Washington Watch host, was able to jump on board here. Tony, first of all, I was a little disappointed that you weren't able to join us earlier, but I'm glad you're here now.
Well, thanks, Evan. As you know, radio can be fluid, especially on days like this where so much is breaking news. And so I happened to be on the phone with the White House and was actually on that call later with that Jack Hibbs mentioned earlier. So thanks for hosting today. It's been a really busy weekend as we've kind of walked through this process. And I just want to jump on to number one. Look, for the Christian community, and Jack kind of, I heard a little bit of what he had to say earlier when he was on with you. This can be for the church, for believers, those who have the confidence that comes in walking with the Lord Jesus Christ, as he says in Philippians chapter 4, that be anxious for nothing, but by prayer and supplication, let your requests be made known unto God. And so I just think that we need to walk with that confidence. We don't need to be fearful. And as we do that at a time of such great uncertainty, people are going to see that, hey, why are you not frantic? Why are you calm? Well, it's because, you know, we're able to take these things to the Lord. And I'm so grateful that the president issued at our request issued the call to prayer for the nation. And it's going to be difficult. There's no question. It's going to be challenging the next few weeks. But I believe as we continue to pray, we continue to serve, we continue to seek God, that the nation could come out on the other side of this a stronger nation spiritually.
Well, Tony, do you have a few minutes to maybe handle a couple of the questions that you and I were going to talk about in the second block?
Absolutely, right ahead.
All right. Well, we're going to
fire away.
We're going to talk about how we can as believers in different churches around the country, around the nation, and around the world, frankly, because there are some people listening to this on the other side of the earth. We've got restrictions that we're dealing with here. Now it went from 50 people last night to 10 people today. That even makes having community groups meetings difficult. So as we have this quickly moving landscape, what are some of your thoughts about how we as the body can work together in this situation?
Well, there's first off, I think we can use technology. I have a small group Bible study that we started back at the first of the year when we started our two-year Through the Bible program. And we actually had most of our group via Facebook Live this past Saturday. So we can use technology to still gather together, to stay connected. For churches, and this has been, I've had multiple conversations today with the White House regarding churches, because as one who's pastored a church in Louisiana where we've had natural disasters, I know what it means to a church when they are not able to meet for a week or two. And as most people, they make their contributions when the plate is passed. Churches live just like many families. They live kind of paycheck to paycheck. It's Sunday to Sunday. And at this time, this is when the church is involved in ministry. A lot of food banks, the shelves are empty. A lot of the elderly can't get out to get their medications, can't get food. And so this is where the church can step in and minister, but they have to have the resources to do that. So I want to encourage people, look, you may not be able to put the money in the plate, but if you can do electronic transfer of making your tithe and offerings to the church, do that. Drive by the church. Most church offices are open at least limited hours. We cannot neglect the ministry of the church at this time, and be creative in some of the ways that we can do the ministry.
It's going to be so important, more and more important right now, Tony. I totally agree with you. Don't stop giving to your church, because the church can do some amazing things. They're all over the country. We care about what's going on. We're looking for opportunities to serve. So don't neglect that, as Tony just said. Well, Tony, you just mentioned that you'd had a conversation with the White House about churches. What is the feedback that you're getting from them?
Good question. They're very cognizant of the challenge to the church, and they're also very aware and desirous of the partnership with the church to do the ministry like I just talked about. The church can minister where government cannot, in a way that the government cannot. One of the things that in this, we're trying to get some clear guidelines, but here's one of the things we've been working on, is especially as we have Easter coming up. Now, this guideline that came out today is for next 15 days, no meetings, the recommendations, no meetings greater than 10. Now, I want to be very clear on this, because some people have confused this with saying the government is infringing on the First Amendment. No, they're not. The government has not said the churches cannot meet. The federal government has not said that. They're making these recommendations. Now, we have said it is best to comply based upon the knowledge that they have. And this is all based upon models that they've formulated based upon what has happened in other countries on the spread of the coronavirus. So they're doing this not arbitrarily, but based on, so the information comes available, they can create the statistical models, and they feel like if we flatten this thing out in the next 15 days, we can get ahead of it. That said, one of the things we need to look at, our messages, our services being online, but outdoor meetings, if we keep the social distance, are an option. Because, and of course, that doesn't work everywhere in the country, but down south this time of year, it's actually pleasant outside. If you keep your social distance, and there's the surfaces on there, this is where the big transfer of the virus is happening, is on surfaces. It's not so much the airborne that's the risk, it's the surfaces. And so if people bring their own blanket or whatever, just bring everybody out and tell them to keep their, put their arms out and keep their distance from each other. They can have a shortened worship service in the parking lot of the church or at a local stadium or something. Be creative, pray, but be cognizant of the risk to your people. We don't want to be a part of causing the spread of this, but at the same time, we want to attend to the spiritual needs of our people and of our community.
That's right. Well, Tony, again, thanks for jumping on here. If you this is your program, feel free just to hang on here and jump in the last 10 minutes or so. Want to just get Travis. Anything else you want to say before we jump to Travis and David?
Well, I gave you the wheel today. I appreciate you taking it over. I'm going to be I'll be back tomorrow so folks can hear what I've got to say tomorrow. But, Evan, thanks for filling in. And just I want to encourage people, even though the president declared Sunday as a national day of prayer, this is something we need to be praying about every day as we go through this. And the president, when we asked him to make this, declare this day of prayer, he was immediate. He understands the importance of prayer, the need for prayer. So let's continue to lift up the president and his team, lift up the nation, lift up our neighbors, and ask God to intervene and stop this virus.
Amen. That's such great, great advice, Tony. And thank you. I'm glad I had an opportunity to talk with you this afternoon. Safe travels, and we'll look forward to hearing you tomorrow hosting this thing.
All right. Thanks so much, Evan. God bless.
All right. You bet. Thank you. All right. So Travis and David, are you on the line with us? Just want to check before I start asking you questions.
We're here.
All right. Very good. Well, let's turn the corner just a little bit. We're going to talk a little bit more about the debate last night between former Vice President Joe Biden and Senator Bernie Sanders. In particular, want to talk. There was a fair amount of discussion that had to do with the Hyde Amendment. And we're going to play a clip in just a moment about that. But first, Travis, let me ask you about why the Democratic stance on abortion has become so steadfast. It doesn't seem like there's any room in the party for anybody pro-life, and there are even some Democratic pro-life organizations that are upset about this.
Yeah, no, it's a good question. And I would ask the party why they have no room for pro-lifers. You know, they're the ones who've imposed this on themselves, increasingly taken a pro-abortion stance and refused to listen to pro-lifers. I mean, we're at FRC, we are trying to promote a culture of human life and human dignity wherever we can. So we welcome all who want to partner with us in that. It's the Democratic Party apparatus, which has largely at the national level rejected that. And that's a question for them. I don't know why, but it is sad to see this embrace of the culture of death and promotion of abortion. We're going to do everything we can, though, to continue fighting for life here at Family Research Council.
Well, David, in just a moment, I'm going to ask you to explain to our listeners, break down the Hyde Amendment a little bit and explain what it is. But Bobby, first, would you play the clip related to the Hyde Amendment from last night's debate?
Joe, you have in the past on more than one occasion voted for the Hyde Amendment, which says that a woman, low-income woman, could not use Medicaid funding for an abortion. Is that still your view, or have you modified
it? It is not my view. It's not my view. And by the way, everybody who's been in the Congress voted for the Hyde Amendment at one point or another because it was locked in other bills. The reason why I affirmatively came out opposed to the Hyde Amendment was that if we're going to have public funding for all health care along the line, there is no way you could allow for there to be a requirement that you have Hyde Amendment, a woman who doesn't have the money could not have coverage under health care.
Well, I'm glad.
Number two, and I've done that. I did that a while ago, okay? Number one. Number two, I would send immediately to the desk of the United States Congress when I'm elected president, if I'm elected president, a codification of Roe v. Wade amended by Casey, because I think it is a woman's right to choose. I think it's a woman's opportunity to be able to make that decision. And, in fact, I've gotten 100% rating from NARAL as well.
Well, isn't that special? We have these two Democratic presidential candidates who are falling all over themselves to say how much they oppose the Hyde Amendment. And by the way, just a procedural thing there. I thought it was interesting that Vice President Biden said that he was going to send a bill to the desk of Congress. I kind of thought it worked the other way around, but maybe I'm confused. David, would you comment on what you just heard?
Yeah, that's right, Evan. And I watched the whole debate last night. It was really disappointing because, in some previous debates, abortion actually hasn't even been brought up. But last night, it seemed that Senator Sanders and former Vice President Joe Biden were tripping over one another to be the more pro-abortion, more extreme candidate. And you heard that right there in that soundbite about the Hyde Amendment, which has been inserted in legislation since the 1970s. It was named after former Congressman Henry Hyde of Illinois. And that just all that says is that federal taxpayer money will not go to fund abortion. And even now, every candidate, including former Vice President Biden, is in favor of getting rid of the Hyde Amendment, which would mean that taxpayer money is going to fund abortion.
Now, what did President Trump do when he came into office with respect to the Hyde Amendment? Either one of you.
Yeah, I mean, he pledged to uphold and veto anything which would roll back the Hyde Amendment. I mean, this has been a longstanding, frankly, across the political aisle position on abortion, not letting our nation's tax money go to fund abortions. So President Trump is on the right side of this issue. Democrats increasingly are not. You know, we saw the attempt to sneak the issue into the coronavirus response funding bill. This is really sad to be trying to take advantage of these situations to push the abortion agenda more. I think we're only seeing more of this, and it's all the more reason we have to be cognizant of it and point it out and work against it when it arises.
Okay, guys, we have just a few more minutes, and I want to kind of turn the corner here and talk about another topic that's very related to what's going on right now around the world with coronavirus, and that is the discussion that they had about health care. Bobby, would you roll the health care clip for us?
In terms of Medicare for all, despite what the vice president is saying, what the experts tell us is that one of the reasons that we are unprepared and have been unprepared is we don't have a system. We got thousands of private insurance plans. That is not a system that is prepared to provide health care to all people.
All right. So there's Bernie. And one of the things that and I thought it was included in this clip, but that they said last night, and I think probably, David, you remember this, there was something that Vice President Biden said, and that was he pointed out the fact that Italy has one of these socialized medicine systems, a national health care system, and that they aren't handling things well at all. Their health care system, from the things I've read, is completely overwhelmed to the point now where they are basically telling some people who they don't think have much chance of survival, we're not even going to be able to take care of you. So, you know, Bernie Sanders is proposing that kind of a system for all of us. Your thoughts on that, David?
Yeah, that's right. And we've talked about that on this show before, that, you know, Bernie Sanders is actually not even a Democrat. He's a Democrat socialist. And the idea that the government would take over the healthcare industry is just a terrible idea. And you're seeing that wherever this has been imposed on other countries, it does not work. And the idea that Bernie would seek to kind of exploit this crisis to push for even a further government takeover of our health care, it's bad policy, and it's never worked wherever it's been tried.
Well, one of the other things that and again, as I mentioned before, there are no journalists who seem to have the background to be able to ask him the questions that need to be asked and expose this for what it is. Travis, about 30 seconds, if you would, your last comment before we close out today.
Yeah, I mean, I think that last point just reiterates what we do at FRC from a Christian worldview, uphold human dignity for all people who are created in the image of God. Everything we do in our policy has to be driven from this reality.
Very good. Well, Travis Weber, David Clausen, thanks so much. Great being on today with you all. Tony, we'll be back tomorrow. And don't fear.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council and is entirely listener supported. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.